Childhood should be a time filled with fun and laughter.
She's just perfect.
But some children have nothing to smile about. A young woman wants a lover more than her daughter.
A sociopath. I would label Stacy as a sociopath.
Motherhood brings no joy to a disturbed woman.
Evil was awake, alive, and terrorizing this house.
And a single mom prefers partying to parenting.
Symbolically, she was completely getting him out of her life.
These deadly women lack a mother's instinct to protect and nurture. They bury their babies. For most mothers, the bond with her baby is sacred.
Oh, she's just perfect.
But for others, the love of a man,
she was going to do anything in her power to keep him,
is more precious.
Some women were not meant to be mothers.
In Lancaster, California, on March 18th, 2009, a shocking crime occurs. A young mom is attacked in a park.
Emma?
And worse,
Emma?
Her 18-month-old daughter is abducted.
Emma!
We had received a phone call at Homicide Bureau that there was an Amber Alert and an abduction up in the Antelope Valley in the Lancaster area.
I've been attacked. They've taken my baby.
She and Emma were at the park, and she was hit on the head, and Emma was taken, and she was possibly raped.
They've taken my baby. Emma!
It's a crime that puzzles police. There seems to be no motive. And the victim, 24-year-old Stacy Barker, doesn't have any enemies. She comes from a loving family who give the single mom all of their support from the day Emma is born.
Emma was cared for by her grandmother, Susan Barker, during the day while her mom, Stacy, went to work. Her mother, in fact, changed her working hours so that she could be home during the day to take care of Emma for Stacy.
Oh, she's just perfect.
And then went to work in the evenings and worked until the late hours of the night.
For months, Stacy is just that.
Both Susan and her husband said she was a great mother.
According to co-workers, she was very good with Emma. Emma was everything to her.
But the shine of motherhood soon fades in favor of a little fun.
A lot of young women that find they're pregnant think, oh, having a baby will be so wonderful and romantic.
Can't you hear Emma? What are you all dressed up for?
I've got a date.
You're not going out again.
But after reality sets in, the 2 a.m. feedings and the diaper changes and not being able to go out and party because they have to take care of their baby, the luster wears off.
Stacy wants a good time.
She's very uncaring, very narcissistic.
I won't be late, I promise.
And very self-centered, very selfish.
I'm not sure why Stacy even had Emma. She essentially dumped her on her parents.
Stacy
wanted more and more and more freedom. Freedom to go out, to party, to date, to be with her friends.
Party girl Stacy is having a good time.
Stacy.
Everywhere,
Stacy.
Except at home.
Great, see you soon. What?
You can't leave Emma on her own like this.
She's fine.
No, she's not. You have to take more responsibility.
Oh, my God. Seriously, Mom?
Stacy!
And her mother is reaching her breaking point.
Stacy saw the world in terms of what the world could do for her, not what she was responsible for. And she didn't like having responsibilities.
It progressively got worse, and it got to the point where she would go out, she wouldn't come back until 2-3 in the morning.
When did you get in?
When I wanted to.
And at some point, Susan said, this is unhealthy. And she began to confront Stacy about it.
You're still drunk.
Don't start. I gotta go.
While Sue picks up the slack of caring for Emma, Stacy picks up a new man.
He was a young man in his 20s, single. He worked two jobs, but he liked to party. Stacy's main concerns in life were pleasing whatever guy she was with.
And for this guy, she'll do anything.
Who's that?
My mom.
Know that.
My daughter, Emma.
It is not common for a woman to put anyone before the needs of her child. But Stacy had no problem with it.
You got a daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, I ain't good with kids.
It doesn't change anything. You don't need to be good with kids. You just need to be good with me.
She was falling in love with him. And she was going to do anything in her power to prove this love for him, even if it meant somewhat neglecting Emma.
Stacy falls hard for her new boyfriend.
Brad!
But the feeling isn't mutual.
He liked his life the way it was. He wasn't financially ready to take on a family, and he enjoyed being single and living that single life.
He purposely chose not to get close to Emma because if his relationship with Stacy ended, then he would disappoint Emma also, and he didn't want to do that.
Stacy is torn between her two loves.
In her eyes, Emma was basically in the way.
And the choice she makes is inconceivable. March 18th, 2009, Lancaster, California. 24-year-old single mom, Stacy Barker, looks like she's ready for work.
I called in sick.
Really?
Yeah.
But she has no intention of going.
She decided, I don't feel up to going to work, but she obviously didn't tell her parents this and the reasons why. And she dressed as if she was going to work, but then she went over to his apartment.
Back at home, baby Emma is being looked after by Stacy's mom, Sue. And she has had enough.
Mommy is in big trouble when she gets home. One more for Nana.
I think Stacy was narcissistic, selfish, and immature.
Stacy's boyfriend makes it clear he doesn't want to be a father to Emma. And the dark depths of Stacy's desire are exposed.
They talked in general about their relationship and where he wanted it to go.
Why would she leave alone?
And I believe she felt that Emma was jeopardizing her relationship.
Sorry. Well, sorry isn't good enough. This is the second time you have made me late for work. You are going to have to get alternative childcare arrangements.
Stacy went home and had the bad argument with the mother, and we believe that's when she said, I've got to make a decision here. and the decision she made was a fatal mistake.
It's not you, it's my boyfriend. She's never happy.
Welcome to motherhood.
Mom.
Emma was a burden. Stacy wanted her freedom. Emma had to go.
What? Eat it. Eat your food.
She had gotten into the argument with her mom, so she wanted to leave the house. So she packed up Emma and she told her brother Nick, who was at home, that she was going to take Emma to the park.
I'm taking Emma to the park.
But in fact, instead of taking Emma to the park, sometime after leaving the house, she had given Emma a dose of some type of medication.
To solve her childcare problems, she gives Emma a triple dose of an adult cough medicine.
I think Stacy overdosed Emma to kill her.
Emma, open up. Open up. It's really yummy. Have some more.
And it didn't work. So then she had to suffocate her herself.
Emma had marks on her face and her nose was bleeding to indicate that there was some pressure involved in this suffocation.
It is the coldest of killings.
She has the argument with her mother and she decided, I've got to get rid of Emma. That's premeditation.
Stacy Barker murdered her 18-month-old daughter, Emma, because the attention of a boy she liked was more important than being Emma's mother.
Stacy now needs to get rid of her little girl.
When Emma's body was found, it was found in the shape of her car seat. That means that after Stacy killed her, she drove around with her in the car, probably at least 5 hours. That's how long it would take for rigor mortis to set in.
I have not seen anything like this in my career. For a mother to take the life of their child and actually show no care, no remorse, just to discard her like she's a piece of garbage is just incomprehensible. I can't even imagine. She basically discarded her like trash.
Stacy, calm and collected, now contrives an alibi for her rape and Emma's abduction.
She injured herself in a way to make it believable that she had been abducted and assaulted.
She went to great lengths to stage this story to make it look like Emma had been kidnapped and that she had been raped.
Even after murdering her daughter, Stacy tries to draw attention and sympathy to herself.
They've taken my baby!
It was always about Stacy.
Her boyfriend dials 911 and arrives at the scene before the police.
They took my baby.
Who took your baby, ma'am?
But when they check Stacy's phone records, they find that at the time of the attack, she wasn't in the park, but traveling on a freeway. Her lies exposed. Stacy tries another tack.
Without Stacy's help, we never would have found Emma until the high grass had been cut.
They took my baby.
Stacy's defense was that it was an accident and that Emma had actually suffocated on a plastic baggie.
Stacy told the police she tried to cover up an accidental death because she didn't want people thinking she was a bad mother. Stacy knew she was a bad mother.
Through this entire investigation, Stacy never once showed any remorse. I would label Stacy as a sociopath.
On May 24th, 2011, Stacy Barker is convicted of first-degree murder and child abuse.
To Stacy, motherhood seemed more like a life sentence than a blessing.
Sentenced to 25 years to life, she will be eligible for parole when she is 51.
When Stacy gets out of prison, she'll be too old to have children. That's a blessing.
When childhood trauma haunts an adult,
she turns that darkness around on the people she loves.
No, please, just let me out.
The bad memories can be transferred across generations.
Kelly concluded that her life was hell, and this was the appropriate ending for it.
And sometimes the consequences are unthinkable.
This horrible tragedy was completely preventable.
In East Hartford, Connecticut, in 1999. Devout Baptists, Kelly Silk.
Shh, Pastor Briggs, go and say a prayer for us.
And her husband, Charles, are busier than most parents. They have four children, and the three youngest are all under the age of three.
What we're about to receive make us truly thankful.
Amen.
Kelly appeared to be a normal young mother. Please. She was physically attractive. She had friends, and she belonged to a church, and she was involved in different things.
Kelly homeschools 8-year-old Jessica, as well as caring for her toddlers and baby.
I like this one, Kelly.
No, I'm reading this one.
Hey, Mom, look what I did.
But Kelly is struggling to cope.
I told you this!
And when she cracks, the children suffer.
Right off in the investigation, a ruler was found, and it was inscribed with the term rod of correction. Did a complete, thorough search of the home, and in that process, I found homemade clubs, and these also had biblical passages inscribed on them.
Kelly and her husband were guided in the discipline of their children by taking the Bible literally.
It was very inappropriate and just wrong.
The corporal punishment happens behind closed doors, but the scars of the abuse can't be hidden.
Neighbors had told us that they had observed that the children all had bruising and marks on their bodies.
Who's there?
The Department of Child and Youth Services comes over to the house.
What do you want?
Talks to the parents. And you know what? They leave. No problem.
My children are fine, and I'm busy.
They weren't allowed within the house.
I said I'm busy!
And after a few efforts to investigate, which were all denied, they closed out the case with nothing.
It's not just the children in need of help. Kelly is suffering as well.
Jessica did describe to us a pattern of her mother experiencing depression and emotional problems with each of her siblings' births.
With the birth of every child, Kelly's postpartum depression becomes more severe.
Mom! No, please, just leave me alone!
Oftentimes we see in women suffering from postpartum depression, they become resentful of their children. It's impossible for them to look at their baby and not see the source of their intense psychological pain.
Lily's depression becomes overwhelming. But she doesn't seek medical help. The born-again Christian seeks spiritual guidance.
So Kelly does the right thing, really. Kelly reaches out. She reaches out to the pastor of the church.
How have you been?
I need help. I'm overwhelmed.
I think I'm getting worse. I just can't handle it anymore. My friend says I should see a psychiatrist.
I'm living in darkness. You know what they tell her?
Kelly, you have the church. God will show you the way.
I don't think I need medication.
Kelly, medication will only cloud your memory. What you need to do is pray harder to God.
Pray more. Prayer. That's going to help you.
I've been arranging this for the weekend. I think this will help if you come along.
She goes back home, gets on her knees. But it's not enough.
Okay.
You cannot pray away depression.
Without professional intervention, her depression deepens. It makes Kelly feel like a failure, who doesn't deserve to live.
There was a history of suicide attempts. It's clear that the family did not fully understand the needs and the depth of Kelly Silk's emotional issues.
Mom? Kelly is following the same path that she watched her own mother take.
When she was 7 years old, her mother commits suicide in the bathtub.
Mom.
And this has a detrimental effect on her psyche.
Mom?
And this is where the darkness starts to invade her. It starts to settle on her, and she can't escape it. She just can't get away from it.
Mom.
Essentially what happened at that moment, her mother taught her inadvertently how to deal with depression. Kill yourself.
In her depressed state, adult Kelly keeps thinking of her mother's suicide. She obsessively talks to friends about it.
For years and years and years, she's asking everybody she can, why? This tells me that she might have blamed herself for this.
She spent a good portion of her life wondering that, and questioned why her mother didn't kill her as well at the time.
Her dark thoughts aren't just putting Kelly's life in danger.
God, oh!
Kelly's grip on reality is slipping. In East Hartford, Connecticut, in 1999, mother of four, Kelly Silk, is suffering severe postpartum depression and is on the brink of insanity.
No, please, just leave me alone!
Kelly had four children. The youngest was 3 months. She was overwhelmed and clinically depressed.
On the night of June 10th, Kelly reaches her breaking point.
We'll never know exactly what caused Kelly to cross the line from trying to keep it together to totally letting go. But my guess is that it's probably a situation maybe with the infant sleeping next door. We know that the infant had some bruising to his body and around his neck. That'd be typical for parents who lose control. Pick him up by the neck and squeeze him by the neck.
Once Kelly loses control, she can't stop.
He's awoken by the knife penetrating into him. And he gets up, he gets out of bed in a daze.
Innocent eyes witness the nightmare.
Jessica told us that she had heard a commotion in the master bedroom, that she went in the room and saw her mother stabbing her father to death and that he collapsed.
She starts stabbing the little tiny girl.
Kelly stabs 8-year-old Jessica 61 times.
So Jessica turns and starts running away, stab wounds, bleeding. Kelly runs out and gets the gasoline. And this is where the real horror begins.
While Jessica huddles, helpless, on the floor, Kelly prepares to burn her daughter alive.
This was chaos. A bloody madhouse. Evil was awake, alive, and terrorizing this house.
I mean, the rage and the lack of control that one would be feeling at that point in time in order to go through with something like that.
Kelly was able to stab her own daughter, pour gasoline on her, because Kelly was out of her mind.
A mind that can't bear to live any longer.
The imagery that was created by Kelly of the violence, the stabbing, I can't help but think that Kelly concluded that her life was hell, that it had been made hell, and this was the appropriate ending.
As the house begins to burn, Kelly's tortured life is snuffed out. She suffocates from the smoke, as do two of her younger children.
Jennifer and Jonah Silk shared a bedroom. They both died of smoke inhalation and burn injury.
I'm hoping that they were asleep, and I'm hoping that it was just the smoke inhalation took them in a painless way. I really hope that they didn't suffer.
None suffered more than 8-year-old Jessica, but incredibly, she is still alive.
She arrived at her neighbor's house with gaping wounds, bleeding, and literally on fire.
Help me.
The first thing that was done was the neighbors had her roll on the ground and extinguish the fire.
Jessica had a lot to deal with that night, and she'll be dealing with it the rest of her life. She's going to need help.
Call an ambulance.
There is one more life saved. Against all odds, 2-month-old Joshua is alive.
He suffered some smoke inhalation and had some bruising to his neck, but gladly he survived the incident.
Her husband, Charles, 2.5-year-old Jennifer, and 17-month-old Jonah don't.
For the initial officers arriving, they came upon a scene that is hell, a hell created by human beings.
It was one of the worst scenes that we've had to deal with over the course of time that I've been here.
To the outside world, Kelly seemed like an average mom and housewife. She hid her depression and perceived weakness until she snapped.
When people cry out for help, I think it's important that we give them all the help we can give them.
This horrible tragedy was completely preventable. Because Kelly didn't get the psychiatric care she desperately needed, almost everyone in her family perished.
A child's boundless imagination is a source of great delight, but it can also conjure up fears.
He would not go into that bedroom. He never went into that bedroom.
Occasionally, imagination is not necessary.
That little boy did, in fact, have some sort of premonition.
Some monsters are real.
Symbolically, she was completely getting him out of her life, her mind, everything. Poof. Gone.
In the suburban streets of Lorain, Ohio, day-to-day struggles lie behind many doors.
Where are you? I'm in here.
For 26-year-old Nicole Dyer, it is the grind of single motherhood.
Nicole was a somewhat distant, messy mother. She was very distant from her family, from her friends.
Jacob, this is your room. No. Don't be silly, Jacob. No.
At the time of his birth, 4-year-old Jacob brings delight to his mother's life.
Jacob, stop it.
But the baby joy is fading.
As Jacob got older, she definitely got more distant, so she was starting to see how much the responsibility changed as her child grew.
Come in and have a look.
Motherhood is no longer a tonic, no longer a distraction from a painful past.
Remind me again what's so great about being a mother.
You don't mean that.
Yeah, I do.
She had a very difficult time fitting in, if you will, because of what had happened to her and what she looked like from having been burned.
22 years earlier, Nicole's little brother accidentally changes the course of her life.
Wow, a lighter.
She was playing with her brother, and her brother was playing with a lighter, and it caught her nightgown on fire. It burned 75% of her body, and by the time she graduated from high school, she had about 50 surgeries.
Surgery and disfigurement dominate Nicole's childhood and adolescence.
The kids called her Freddy Krueger. She was tormented endlessly by children. Kids can be cruel.
Children are not as resilient as we think they are. And a child who is repeatedly teased by their peers for their appearance over a course of years is going to emerge from it damaged.
As an adult, Nicole is determined to have the fun she missed out on as a child. She constantly leaves little Jacob with teenage babysitters.
As promised.
Cool. Hey, you don't mind if we bring a couple of friends over here?
Nah, that's fine.
She wanted to party as often as possible. I'll go out with friends, drink, and do whatever young people do.
Cool. I'll see you guys later.
She had a difficult time finding sitters, so she would find these teenage kids in the neighborhoods, them beer, wine, cigarettes, to stay with her child while she went out for the evening.
Jacob, I said let go. Stop being silly. Let go.
So as time went on, the child did not want her to leave. Probably because he didn't know who she was leaving them with.
Hey, little man. How you doing? Hey, little man.
The absent mother also leaves special instructions to the teen sitters.
Come on, you need to calm down. You need to take your medicine.
How to calm the toddler at bedtime.
Open your mouth. As opposed to traditional methods of putting a child to sleep, reading a book, singing a lullaby, Nicole took the route of prescription medications. The babysitters said that Nicole would often give them a codeine elixir to put Jacob to sleep. When they gave Jacob the medication, he would throw it up and they wouldn't give it to him anymore.
The codeine is prescribed for an adult. Nicole is virtually poisoning her 4-year-old son.
Codeine is a narcotic. It is a very dangerous medication to give to a child. It causes sedation. It depresses the central nervous system. It causes sleepiness. And one of the very common side effects is nausea.
Mom, I just don't know how much more I can take.
Jacob's side effects add even more fuel to Nicole's growing resentment.
You're not listening to me. I don't know how much more of this I can take. I'm tired.
He started to become ill quite often with gastrointestinal problems.
I'm tired. I can't do this anymore.
She had, on numerous occasions, had to take him to an emergency room.
Jacob's sickness doesn't soften Nicole. It hardens her.
Nicole did not want to be a mother.
Oh, disgusting. He just threw it up again. I've got to go.
She desperately wants to dispose of her burden.
Instead of putting her child up for adoption or even having her mother raise Jacob, she simply destroyed him.
In Lorain, Ohio, 2003, a soothing bath is not enough to wash away Nicole Dyer's troubles. Since being scarred in a fire as a child, the 28-year-old single mom has struggled with life and now motherhood.
As Jacob got older, she got more distant. She was very unemotionless and not animated at all.
Her 4-year-old son, Jacob, doesn't fit her lifestyle.
Nicole did not want to face the responsibility of raising Jacob. He was, in part, an albatross around her neck.
Nicole wants to cleanse her life, but water is not enough. She turns to what she knows best.
Without question, the most significant event in Nicole's life was the fact that she was severely burned at 4. It changed everything.
Fire and flames have consumed her life. And on August 27th, 2003, they will again. But this time, it is not Nicole who is in danger. But the distraught mom is giving firefighters confusing messages.
She kept telling them that her son was in the house.
Wait, he's in the living room.
She would say in a back room. She would say in the living room.
He's upstairs.
Upstairs?
He's upstairs. Yes, my floor is upstairs.
As firemen search for Jacob, they notice something strange.
She told the firefighters that she had gone in at least on 3 different occasions to try to go in and save Jacob.
I was taking a nap and I woke up and there was smoke everywhere. So I ran to my son's room and I tried to open the door, but it was hot and I couldn't open it. I really
she had no soot on her whatsoever.
She did not have any of the traditional signs that somebody had been inside of a burning home. Her clothes weren't disturbed at all. She did not smell of strongly of smoke, and she did not have any soot anywhere on her body.
But suspicions are too late for the young boy. He's found in his bedroom, the room that he always feared to enter, as if a tragic premonition comes true.
The body was found on the bed. He was curled up in the fetal position, and his puppy was found curled up below the bed.
A tiny life cut short with his best friend.
There was only left side of his face that was actually left, that wasn't entirely burned off. The rest of his body was pretty much charred and melted to the box spring of the bed in that room.
Retired Ohio police detective David Garcia says evidence at the grim scene lead investigators to believe the fire was no accident.
The fire department advised us that they suspected that the house fire had been set purposely. The fire investigators determined from the charring on the floor that gasoline had been poured in a trail from the bedroom across the threshold through the dining room and through the living room. There were hardwood floors. And the fire had left impressions on the flooring that they were able to determine that there were large amounts of gasoline that had been trailed and poured out of the bedroom through the house up to the front door.
She never tried to save that child. She wanted to destroy him.
Fire once ruined her life. Now Nicole hopes it will give her freedom.
A lot of women aren't meant to be mothers, and they grin and bear it, and they are fine. Some not so much.
But the freedom is short-lived. Nicole is the number one suspect.
Nicole didn't exactly help her own case when, the night of the funeral, she was seen out dancing and singing karaoke. Not too smart. Nicole couldn't even fake it.
Nicole is arrested, and her story that the house fire is an accident is soon put to rest. Jacob was dead before the fire started.
If Jacob had been alive during the fire and died as a result of smoke inhalation, his blood carbon monoxide levels would be sky high, and there would have been evidence of soot throughout his airways. None of that was found. And in these cases, there's only one motive, is to destroy evidence.
The tub was full of water, so there was a possibility that she could have drowned him. There's a possibility that she could have suffocated him. Any number of ways that she could have used to kill her child, ultimately, we never were able to determine.
Despite uncertainty of the method, in 2004, Nicole Ann Dyer is convicted of murder and sentenced to death.
The jury took only 2.5 hours to convict her on 10 counts that she had been indicted on. I'm not ashamed to say that I literally burst out crying because I felt so relieved. I felt like I was literally battling Satan himself.
In 2008, due to a trial error, her sentence is overturned. Rather than face a retrial, Nicole pleads guilty in return for a lesser sentence. Life in prison. No chance of parole.
There are so many people out in the world that long to have children that can't and go through a difficult process of adoption and all these things. Here, this perfectly normal, healthy, happy boy no longer lived.
What is clear is that Nicole did not want to be a mother. Fortunately, she never will again.
These deadly women turned from nurturing moms to murderers. Stacy Barker suffocated her young daughter to pursue love. Kelly Silk blamed her family for her depression. And Nicole Dyer sacrificed her son so she could party. There was nothing motherly about these three women. They put their needs before their families. They bury their babies.